fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
We're gonna go see Raiders of the Lost Ark in IMAX awesome. This afternoon. I'm so happy about that.
That's awesome. I'm really debating over whether to buy the Blu-ray set, because it comes with the crystal skull, and I don't want to pay for that. I don't want to contribute to that.
How much is the set?
I think it's on Amazon. It's only like $60 or a little over $60. So, yeah.
I might wait and buy it used. And, yeah. You know, then I'm not taking as big of a hit. And, I mean, you know, I'll be honest. I'll probably just never watch Crystal Skull, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I just don't want to contribute to it in any way, shape, or form. I mean, $60 is a pretty good price, you know, for that. Because I think the original price is like $100. Or something like that.
Well, is there a way to get them separate?
No, not yet. I'm sure at some point there will be, but I don't think that as of yet.
Because honestly, I would just buy the first two anyway.
Yeah, I like the third one too. I mean, you don't like Henry Jones?
I thought that was a great... I thought, you know, Sean Connery was fantastic. It's just that the movie itself has like a lot of technical issues that... really, like, it really sort of takes it away. Honestly, you know, Sean Connery sort of saves that movie. If you take away that whole father-son dynamic, the movie itself is really weak.
Yeah, I absolutely 100% agree with you. I remember when Crystal Skull was coming out, and we rented them all on DVD. And surprisingly, and I know people will probably get, like, really ticked off at me for saying this, but at the time I thought Temple of Doom was just like really solid. Like,
Temple of Doom's a great movie. That's my it's up there with Raiders, like, because it's so different, you know. It's such a its own thing. It goes darker, you know. I really enjoy Temple of Doom.
Yeah. Well, I just realized that, like, once the action starts, like, it does not stop in that movie. Like, it just keeps going. Like, the tension just keeps going. Like, and it's got you on the edge of its seat for the whole time. And sure, it's a little unrealistic, and the mineshaft chase is a little crazy, but come on. I mean, it is what it set out to be, which is like a serial, like an old, you know, 30s, 40s, like, movie serial, just like out of control, you know?
Yeah.
And it's great. And I know a lot of people hate Short Round and stuff like that, but I don't know. There's something about it. And they can't stand the female protagonist, you know, that she's just, all she does is like scream all the time. Those are the big criticisms. But I got to tell you, like, when we were watching it a couple years ago, I was just blown away as to how much I got into it, you know?
Yeah. I'm a big fan of the second one.
Yeah, I really do like the second one, and I think it's solid. I definitely think it's better than the third. I think you're absolutely right. If it wasn't for the father-son dynamic, you can tell that Spielberg was a little tired of the whole thing. You know what I mean?
I mean, there are just, like, so many, like, just blatant, you know, mistakes in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, the whole... you know, looking for the X marks the spot, and, you know, in some shots it's there, in some shots it's not there, you know.
I mean,
it's just like, wow, that's a pretty big thing, you know. If you just called attention to, like, something and, you know, told everyone, hey, look at this, and then, you know, suddenly it's missing from the shot.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's just a little messed up.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even remember that, to tell you the honest truth, but... for me, it's mostly like the action sequences just aren't really all that engaging, you know.
Yeah, except for that tank. That tank scene was really solid.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm talking about the big boat chase scene. Like, is it in Venice that it occurs? Oh, wow.
Yes.
It's just so slow and just so, you know, and you even get to that point where the propellers are sort of like cutting up the boat, and and I just not engaged at all in that. You know, I remember seeing it in the theater and just even as a teenager thinking like, oh, this is kind of not exciting, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know what the first what the first Raiders did, like with the propeller thing, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, with the, that was really impressive at the time because you always, you know, sort of had like the heroes and villains fighting close to these big like chopping things, but nobody ever fell into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then like for somebody to actually like go into it was just like a
yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's just brilliant. That first movie is just, and I don't think I saw Raiders up until I saw maybe this is why I like Temple of Doom so much. I don't think I saw Raiders until after I saw Temple of Doom because I was really young and kind of like a sensitive kid, and you know, I didn't even know that Raiders existed for a long time, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And then the whole controversy with Temple of Doom and, you know, Gremlins and all that, and the PG-13, that's kind of like what kicked off all that craziness back in the '80s, and that's what kind of made me aware of Indiana Jones, I think, was when I saw Temple of Doom in the theater, and my mom actually took me to see it because there were all these warnings like, don't let your kids go see it by themselves, you know. And I just remember being just blown away, just thinking it was the most awesome thing ever.
Yeah,
just being like, oh my god, this is so cool. Yeah, so oh, that's great. So it's in how long is it going to be out, because I didn't realize that they had already done that.
I think it's just a week.
Oh shit. This is
I think they're only doing it, you know, sort of as the, you know, teaser for the, you know, the DVD package or Blu-ray package.
Oh, man. I don't know if that's time enough to get me a sitter for this week. And I honestly don't know if I have the energy during the week the way things are going.
Yeah. I hear you.
Oh, my God. Well, that's great. So what, you're going to see an afternoon show or?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. I wish I could go. Oh, man. I'm just so glad that Spielberg apparently said, like, they're not touching it as far as, like, digitally. Yeah. You know, they're not removing the glass from the snake or whatever in the first one. Like, oh, it's such a good, good, good movie. But anyway, we should probably say that this is Part-Time Fanboy.
That's true.
Yeah. This is Christian, and I'm here with Paul. And it's been a while since we recorded one of these. I think it's been a month.
It has been, and we've had a few technical difficulties. And, you know, we've also had family things coming up. You know, Christian is now an official school dad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's always gone to preschool, but now it's kindergarten, and it's totally different.
This is where it gets real, you know?
Yeah, it's getting real for sure. Yeah, so, yeah, we've had a lot of personal things come up for everybody. One being that Ian got married.
Congratulations
to Ian Scheller, our own, and his wonderful bride, Heidi. I actually got to go to the wedding, and it was really, really nice and had a really good time. But he's itching to do a podcast. He was like, yeah, what's going on? Have you guys been recording? And I was, no, we haven't really been recording much because, you know, we've just been so busy with other things and work too. Work has been keeping me busy, really busy too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but there's been a lot of crazy stuff going on. And so now we're back and we started off with that little conversation about Raiders.
Yep.
So that's great. So I think one of the things that you and I had been wanting to talk about were like comic shops.
Absolutely.
Like in general. And I kind of wanted to make it a larger conversation, but you know what? It's been so long since the last one, and I think we probably both have a lot to say about the subject.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I guess like my big thing is thinking, you know, when, how can the comic book shops get us to go back on a weekly basis? I know that I'm pretty much a lapsed comic book collector. I have like a small pull list because it's the only way that a comic shop will be able to get me a book or make sure that I have a book.
Right.
Because there are books like even The Walking Dead, which I was thinking about switching to trades. I just can't do it. I don't know why. So that's like on my pull list. And there's a couple of Image books that maybe they just don't they can't order enough of, or they just don't have them in stock. Like if I wanted to just casually walk into a shop like once every couple of weeks, they wouldn't have in stock. And unfortunately, that's like the really good stuff, the stuff that I'm interested in. So I have to have like a pull list. And that's sort of my biggest kind of gripe is, you know, with this particular shop, it's like for them to pull you something, you have to have five books or something. You have to subscribe to at least five books.
So there's like a minimum order then?
Yeah, there's like a minimum order per month. And I don't even know that I fulfill that, to tell you the honest truth. But I can't think of another business where it's like, hey, you have to order something that you kind of aren't really into to have the thing that you're really into. You know what I'm saying? So like if I want to have an issue of Walking Dead every month, I mean, I can't think of like, I don't know, maybe I'm not that much of a fanboy anymore. That's why it's called part-time fanboy, to where there's something that I have to have every month. Like I can wait for the trade these days. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
I know that my personal taste, I've moved away from the monthlies also, and I've been pretty much either doing trades or, honestly, most of what I'm reading these days are just sort of self-contained graphic novels, you know, with beginning, middle, end. That's what I find appeals to me more right now than actual, you know, sort of month to month. I guess, you know, it's in a way, it's funny that we started off talking about Raiders, because Raiders began as a, you know, a tribute to the serials, you know.
Yeah.
And I've just found that my personal tastes tend to run away from, have moved from serial entertainment into things that are more, you know, closed ended. Even with television shows, I really like things that sort of have a defined beginning, middle, end. So that's just my own sort of personal quirk, I think, that sort of led me away from the comic book shop. But, you know, I have gone back a few times looking for certain things, either that I didn't get a chance to read back a few years ago, or, you know, sort of looking for new things. And there are some really good books out there. It's just hard for me to sort of justify going weekly to, you know, pick up certain books anymore.
Yeah, I mean, we have to sort of break it down, because I mean, that's sort of, I mean, the biggest reason for me, or one of the biggest reasons, is that each book is, I mean, they're from $3 to $4 each, you know.
And
shops will, a lot of shops don't give discounts. A shop that I used to go to a lot, DJ's Universal City Comics over in over by Universal Studios, like Studio City area, they would give you like a 30% discount. I mean, they still do, from what I understand. I just moved further away from that area, and it was getting harder and harder for me to, you know, keep up with a pull list and get over there. And
yeah. I'm in a similar circumstance too, because I lived very close to the Fantastic Comics Factory in Pasadena, which is, you know, just a giant shop that's full of wonderful things. And when I moved out here to the San Gabriel Valley, I still really, really love my local comic store. That's a comic seller in Monrovia.
Yeah.
But they're just sort of not on the same scale as the shop that I was used to. So, you know, that's sort of, that affected me in a little bit of a way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that affects me too. I mean, there's a shop right down the street from me called Collector's Paradise, and it's a really, really great shop in the fact that it carries a lot of indie stuff, and it carries a lot of, you know, it's just not all about mainstream comics, but it also is the kind of shop where you go in and, you know, they're very much about upticking the price on something that has just come out like maybe a month or two ago, and because it's hot, you know, they've got it bagged and they've got it boarded, or they're very much about, you know, having that alternate cover, you know, bagged and boarded, all the stuff that in the 90s that I just couldn't stand, where it was like these multiple covers and comic shops engaging in that sort of like gouging, you know. And I guess they got to do it. What can I say? You know, it's a business. If somebody's going to pay that much for something like that. But it's sort of a mentality that I just never really liked. And it's also, you know, every time I sort of go into that shop, it's like the hard sell. They see what you're buying and they're like, hey, do you like this? Hey, hey, what about this? And I guess a lot of people could see that as sort of informative. But to me, you know, I kind of want to discover things myself. And if I ask you a question, then be helpful. But if you're just kind of like trying to force books on me, like when I'm buying, and a little bit, you know, hey, if you like this issue of Batman, maybe you'll like, you know, or what about this? And it kind of keeps going down the line and stuff like that. And actually trying to, I find them a lot of times trying to recommend stuff that I know I don't like or that I know I've already tried, you know, because they're just so into this like wide spectrum of things. But it is, I mean, I don't want to knock them either. They're a really good shop. They know what they're talking about most of the time. But that's the thing, is they don't necessarily, they give you like a 10% discount, which is a decent discount, because when you break it down, the DJ's discount is only 20% because you're paying about 10% in tax.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, but that's the thing that drives me crazy, is like it's become up to the retailer to like give you the deal as opposed to the comic book companies. You know what I mean? The comic book companies are kind of like pricing you out, because
well,
I guess
it's funny too, because I feel like the comic book companies have like sort of given their deepest discounts now toward purchasing online comics.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, because they'll have, you know, they'll have weekends or weeks where you'll be able to get 99-cent downloads.
Yeah.
For issues and things like that, which is great. I mean, I really enjoy the idea of, you know, a dollar comic again.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's great, but you're not getting anything for it. I mean, you don't get the PDF, you don't get anything in paper, which to some people maybe isn't necessary. But, you know, as Mark Waid has said on his, you know, blog and stuff, if that business goes out of business, you're screwed. You know,
right.
You don't get to keep those in any way, shape, or form, unless they were to realize that they were going out of business. But I guess that's the whole thing, is that the comic shop has really become kind of the ambassador to the comic book industry in a way. But
yes.
And it's like up to them to push stuff on you or their customers. But A, you know, a lot of them are dying out. And B, you know, how can you keep that business going where it's like you're ordering stuff at a certain price, and the only way to get rid of it eventually is to offer it at a discount, you know, or just try, how can that, you know, keep going? That's what I don't get, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, Corey ran that really interesting poll on his site about what brings you into a shop or brings you to a title. Is it the character or is it the creators?
Yeah.
Did you participate in that one?
No, I didn't even see that it was happening. Maybe I was too busy, but Corey
Blake...
it was
a really interesting question, and I think it sort of came down to, if I'm not mistaken, he'll probably correct us on this if we are, about like 75% creator, you know, 25% character.
Ooh, really?
Yeah, it came down really heavy on, you know, although there was a big degree of overlap too.
Sure, sure.
You know, but you know, that it's the creators that sort of draw people in now.
Yeah.
More than the actual character itself.
Really? Oh, wow, that's a big shift. But we should say that's Corey Blake at comicsobserver.com. And but maybe that poll is still up there. People should go check that out, you know.
Right. And if I'm wrong, please correct me too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hopefully we'll have Corey on again. It's like herding cats to get everyone together on the podcast sometimes. But no, I mean, wow, that's really big. I think that's a huge dynamic shift from like 10, 15 years ago, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, I totally agree, you know, because and that was sort of a product of the 90s too, you know, where suddenly you had, you know, comics illustrators and writers who were doing, you know, commercials, TV commercials, and you know, they sort of became a little bit of a mainstream thing, which was just unheard of before.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, even to the point now where have you heard of this Morrison Fest?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's doing,
you know, Grant Morrison's doing his own comic convention based solely around, you know, his works in Las Vegas, and it's possible for things like that to happen now.
Yeah.
You know, it's rare, but yeah. I think people are a lot more conscious of, you know, who's writing, who's drawing a book now, and, you know, that tends to draw them in more so than, you know, whether it's their, you know, favorite character or not.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's interesting because I remember, you remember when WonderCon moved to Anaheim this past year, and mm-hmm. Then I guess Image Comics was like, hey, we should still have a convention up in the Bay Area or whatever. And then they threw together their Image Comics convention, and they were like, they said, like, all our creators are going to be here, all the, you know, names and whatever, and Kirkman, and, you know, and I don't remember a convention ever just like one company saying, you know, Marvel or DC saying, like, we're putting on a convention and
right,
come check
right.
out our stuff.
The closest, I think, would have been that D20 that Disney did.
Yeah, yeah, D20.
In that case, that's an entire sort of creative studio, you know, that they're presenting there. But you're right. Other than that, the Image sort of, I guess that Image convention is the first time that's ever happened. How was that received? I actually didn't follow up on that.
Well, from what I remember reading, and I wish I could have gone to it, but, you know, you can only go to so many conventions a year and travel mm-hmm. so much. But from what I hear, it was pretty well attended. And, I mean, maybe some of the retailers were griping about, you know, not making enough money or stuff like that. But then you also heard the other side where some people did pretty well or thought it was good for the size convention it was. So I don't know. I don't know if they're going to do it again. I don't know if WonderCon is going back to the Bay Area, to San Francisco. But mm-hmm. I know I liked having them here in Anaheim. So, but yeah, that's interesting that creators are just becoming the big draw. I mean, I know that's the way it is for me right now. You mm-hmm. know, I know that for me, I'm not really drawn to the particular character anymore. If it's you know, what's his name? Who's writing Saga now? You know, that book, is it Brian K. Vaughan is doing that book out of Image Saga. And
yeah.
I read the first two issues and I was like, this is fantastic. And I'll be picking up the first trade. But, you know, I can't remember. It's just such a good and exciting time that creators are, I mean, just like we talked in our last podcast a month ago, that creators are kind of just jumping ship and willing, being able to do their own thing, you know?
Right. And yeah. I think that's sort of what reinvigorates, you know, old characters in a way too, our new creators. You certainly yeah. see it in the movies all the time. I mean, look at obviously the James Bond creative team.
Yeah.
You know? Anytime that there's sort of a new creative team or creator that takes over a series or a franchise, it's sort of a exciting time because you know that they're going to bring in something new that you haven't seen with that character before.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
there are a few creators that are, you know, really trustworthy when it comes to approaching almost anything. Mark Waid's one of them. Brian Vaughn's one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right. But I think we're sort of drifting away from like how we kind of started this conversation, which, and I think the answer for you and me is probably no. Like can the comic book shops pull us back in to a weekly, coming weekly? I mean, do you buy anything on Comixology weekly? Because
I don't buy anything weekly.
Yeah, just like anything.
I just go, what I tend to do is I'll go every few months to the comic seller and I'll go through and see sort of what I've been missing. If it's been collected in trade, you know, maybe I'll pick that up. If there's something exciting, you know, that I've been, you know, looking forward to, maybe I'll have them, you know, pull that aside for me. But, you know, I haven't done that in a long time. The most recent thing that I've done is drop in to see a copy of The Invisibles hardbound,
uh-huh.
which I actually couldn't see because they had sold their only copy.
Oh, so wait, is that out? Or I thought it was coming
yes.
out.
Yes, it is.
Oh.
It's out now.
Oh,
and
wow.
I understand it's a fantastically put together book. It's hand sewn, so you can actually open it up to any page in there and see the complete art. There's no, you know, art running through into the middle of the book where you can't open it up. It's a giant thing. I think it's over 1,500 pages.
Wow.
It's 1,500 pages.
Wow.
I'm pretty excited about seeing that. And, you know, since it's 2012, I have to read it again because that's where the bulk of the book is set.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. It's, well, you know, it's the whole Mayan quote prophecy end of the world kind of thing, you know, that he sort of makes fun of and, you know, deals with in a less spectacular way than, you know, Roland Emmerich did in 2012.
That's funny. So that's, oh wow, so that's out. I didn't even, and that's the whole series, right?
Yeah, all three. It's all three of the books, plus it's got there were a few short stories that appeared in some Vertigo specials.
Oh my gosh.
That are included in there as well. And, you know, that's one of the points, too, that I wanted to talk about, too, is Vertigo. I'll be honest, Vertigo was the main draw for me into with comic stores.
Yeah.
The books that they had in there, the creators that they brought in, like that particular line just kept me coming back for more. You had Preacher, you had The Invisibles, even Hellblazer for quite a run was pretty incredible. Vertigo was just my favorite line, and as that's sort of, you know, fallen apart, is Vertigo still even a DC line anymore?
They are, but I think there were a lot of rumors that they were gonna maybe phase a lot of things into the mainstream, like they might be phasing Vertigo out. But I know that there's definitely a line, but I don't know that it's as strong as it used to be or as prevalent. I think that, you know, a lot of the corporate owned entities have just started, you know, doing what they do, which is focusing on the fact that there's a brightly colored character that they can, you know, put on t-shirts. Yeah, I mean, you're not going to be putting something like Preacher or even Swamp Thing, you know,
right,
on t-shirts, on lunch boxes and stuff like that. So I think maybe
they tried.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they've probably tried, but that's the thing, is it's never going to sell to an audience that you know, that they can make the most profit off of, you know,
right,
or that at least that they think that they can make the most profit off, which is a shame because, I mean, but there's other companies like Oni Press and Dark Horse and Image that are doing still really interesting things and putting out really interesting books that are Vertigo-like, you know.
Right.
The problem is that there's no, and maybe Image is it, or IDW, that there's no one brand that says, like, hey, like, if you're into this,
yes,
everything else is like this, you know, because I know that Vertigo for a while, like, if you liked Preacher, you could almost pick up any other Vertigo book and it would be not exactly the same, but it would be the same sort of flavor, you know what
right.
I mean?
And they had a very high creative standard for a long time.
Yeah.
And that was something that I really appreciated. With almost every company now, it seems a little more scattershot.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that's the thing, too, is not only did they have a creative standard, but their books came out on time. Like, they were on time. And they weren't afraid. Like, Vertigo was not afraid to just mess around, you know, with stuff. Like, I remember one of the first Vertigo books I picked up was Shade the Changing Man.
Yes.
And
Milligan, right?
Yeah, Milligan and that's where I discovered Chris Bocciolo. I think that's how you pronounce his name. And I started picking it up because of the art. And I was like, what is this? This is amazing. And not only that, but, you know, it wasn't like your normal panel breakdown. It was like they were just doing, like, breaking out of panels, like non-linear stuff, just like really weird stuff. And I honestly cannot say that I understood everything that they were doing, but
right,
I definitely was intrigued by it, you know, and it's the same thing. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I totally agree, because I actually met a new friend of mine that I met at a friend's birthday party the other night. And he was has a very similar taste to ours, I think, in comics. And we were talking about that sort of era. And what he said is, you know, during that time, they really did approach comics as literature.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Sandman was literature. The Invisibles is actual literature.
Yeah.
And I don't always see that approach anymore. I do see it, especially in a lot of creator-owned titles. I think Eric Schanauer's Age of Bronze is definitely, you know, I mean, that's literature right there. You know? But overall, as far as a you know, sort of a, I guess, a corporate ideal.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really see any particular line that does that anymore.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, I don't think that there's a specific line that does that. But I think when you use the word, like, quote unquote literature, I think it scares a lot of, like, fans off, because, I mean, let's face it, a lot of this industry was kind of built on the fact that it's just like popcorn entertainment, you know what I mean? And it's also the soap opera aspect, right? So,
right.
I mean, which is, once again, you know, kind of going back to that comic shop discussion, which is, you know, our comic book shops, what is their main source of income? Is it that person who's addicted to the weekly book? I mean, is that the only way that they stay in business? If you drift away from the pamphlets, will comic shops go out of business? And that, to me, is like a big question that I've not really seen answered, you know? But I think the big answer is yes, right? Like, if you don't have that regular influx of comic book readers coming in every week to pick up your product, you're dead in the water. Right? I mean, don't you think?
It would seem that way, because, you know, I mean, I can't imagine any business that would sort of thrive without some sort of regular, you know, consumption of the product.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the truth too, right? I mean, you just have to keep, otherwise they're just like a specialty bookshop, right? And we've seen how bookstores are doing. So
honestly, you've got Vroman's in Pasadena, which is a very successful bookshop. It's a small local chain. And one of the things that they do that keeps them sort of head and shoulders above everyone else is that they have regular artist or author signings and appearances. They have community sort of special events and things like that. And I would argue that that would go a long way for the comic shops to sort of further themselves too. I know that I've gone to a few local signings and things like that. Comic Cellar had Brian Posehn come in a few years ago when he was writing that lovely demented Santa Claus book. You know, when there's sort of a special event like that, I know that I do sort of make the extra special effort to get out to the shop.
And this place, Collector's Paradise, does that all the time. Like, I don't know how they do it, but they get that all the time. They have people coming in for signings and, you know, stuff like that. I know that I got a signed book by Brubaker when I was there one time. But then that's the other thing too, is like when you have these big names come in and there's a big signing, or it's like a special weekend, like Labor Day or whatever, and they're having like the big Labor Day sale. I remember the one time that I went in for one of these sales. I think it was Free Comic Book Day. I like to take my daughter down to Free Comic Book Day, and Collector's Paradise is really good because they have people dressed up in costume and stuff like that. Like the last one, there was a dude dressed up as Darth Vader, which was really cool and stuff like that. But the thing that kind of put me off is that, you know, you set up this big thing and then you may not have the manpower or the space for all the people that are gonna flood your shop. And a lot of those people that are flooding your shop may be first-time comic buyers, parents, you know, people who are not used to the comic shop experience. And I was online for, you know, just buying my daughter a book for herself. I was online for at least 20 minutes, you know, and that's ridiculous, especially if you've got little kids with you. I'm sorry, you know, that's, you can't have that. And that's something that, you know, you've got to address, because, you know, that those are the people that are going to bring in the next generation, you know, and if they come into the shop during a sale, maybe they'll be understanding. But I know that if I have like a little boy or a little girl or something that's running around, ants in their pants, you know, it's like, come on, man, let's get this moving so I can get my kid their book. Or, you know, like I saw a couple of people, and I actually did at one point during a sale, I just put the book back and I said, we'll get it some other time, you know, because you just have to have an awareness of your customer, and stuff like that is off-putting. And maybe it's unfair because they're small businesses, but you know, I that's just something that bugged me, you know?
Yeah, I understand. And you know, that's the, it's tough because I think we tend to view the success of our, of these sort of small businesses in terms of those days, those special days, you know, like it's like, well, look, they're doing really well. That lines out the door, you know, but then, you know, the other 30 days of the month, you know, how is it then? And that's where they're really having to draw, you know, the people in. So, and which comes sort of back to our earlier question of how, what does it take to get us back into, you know, into the comic store? And I think for me, I've sort of, after thinking about this for the last month or so, I think for me, it would be the commitment of a large company like Marvel or DC to have a quality, high quality, you know, creator driven project line like Vertigo that was consistent on a monthly basis.
Yeah.
And, you know, that had very high artistic and, you know, editorial standards. And I think specifically editorial, because I think that's where a lot of the sort of breakdown in the process comes, because it's the editors that really shape a line.
Yeah.
You know, and the editors never really get enough credit, you know. You know, the, it's those are the guys who really, you know, sort of create the brand, and it's a hard job, you know. you know, for me, I think that if there were something like that, I would definitely be more disposed toward doing it.
Yeah, but that's
it would take a major commitment from a major company.
But that's the thing that kills me, is does the market sort of exist for that in on a wide scale? Because like, let's just use an example, like this week, you know, I mean, Titan Books sent me this Flash Gordon on the planet Mongol. On the planet Mongo, sorry, on the planet Mongo. And I guess it's, and I reviewed it for Ain't It Cool last week. And it's gorgeous. I mean, it's this amazing book. If you're out there, maybe I'll put a link to my review on Ain't It Cool, but this is a gorgeous book. It's fantastic. It's amazing. It blew my mind. I'd never been exposed to this before. I've never been exposed to Flash Gordon or Alex Raymond. But
Never.
And just reading it took me back to being like 8 years old again, and thinking, if somebody had handed this to me as a little kid, I mean, as an adult, I'm impressed with it. But as a little kid, if somebody had handed this type of thing to me, my mind would have been blown. I mean, the dude, he goes up in a rocket ship, and there's monsters, there's a lion man, and there's mermen, and he's fighting, you know, and there's space princesses and whatever. It's amazing. So, you know, I wrote a review for it on Ain't It Cool, and this is kind of my frustration sometimes with that sort of segment of, you know, Ain't It Cool, the comic books thing. You go in and you write something that's not part of the mainstream, DC or Marvel, okay? And the talkbacks are just full of people wanting to talk about Batman, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't seem like there's that many people. Like, this is a great book. I would put this up against anything that the big two or any company are putting out. But on a message board for comic reviews, you write a review about it, and maybe there's like one, two people like, oh yeah, okay, I got to pick that up. There's no passion for something out of the mainstream. So what is the circle that, you know, is it that people want to talk about Superman and Wonder Woman kissing? You know, that's it, right? Is that the only giant fan base out there left in comics that will fully support something, you know? Or is it the fact that, you know, maybe that what I'm writing for, you know, that particular group just doesn't congregate there or doesn't care to, like, I know, you know, Mark, Ain't It Cool, has said that he's gotten, and I've gotten the same thing too, where I've gotten emails and people are like, well, I don't want to post in the talk back because, you know, they're kind of crazy there and I don't feel like getting into that. But then it's like, so where is the high-end fan? You know, because there's people that are going to argue with you that, like, oh, Geoff Johns, he writes an amazing Green Lantern. And they're going to say that that's the high end. And to me, that's not the high end. I mean, Geoff Johns is a really great writer. I would love to see him do something, you know, outside of DC Comics sometimes. You know, who knows if he wants to do that. But my point is, it's like, is the mainstream the only discussion that's there? Is there a market for what you and I want? Because and is the younger generation, like kids, are they going to go to comic shops? Because I don't think so, you know. I don't know,
you know. Again, and a lot of this sort of does depend on, you know, sort of, you know, how you said, if it were handed to you when you were 8, would it have grabbed your attention?
Yeah.
Well, what's being handed to the 8-year-olds now? You know,
nothing.
Look at an 8-year-old and look at what grabs them, and what grabs them tends to be something that's TV related, not something that's print related.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not until they're older now, I think, that, you know, that they're starting to really grab things that are print related. Although there are some, but the things that tend to be print related, I notice with children, tend to be things like you know, the Diary of a Wimpy Kid series, or you know, with the girls, it's, you know, the Hunger Games or Twilight thing. You know, these are things that, you know, that these kids are sort of, you know, grabbing hold of. And I'm actually sort of encouraged that, you know, a lot of what we're seeing is people, you know, being drawn more toward books, you know, and maybe adaptations of books. That's encouraging for, you know, the literacy. But then, as far as, you know, for comic books, you know, it's interesting. You know, you're not really seeing too many adaptations of things that are comic related that aren't from the big, you know, the big two.
Sure.
Although I feel like that's going to start changing. I know that there's going to be a live action movie based on an indie comic book called Vamps.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They've got a Facebook page. Go ahead and like it. and they're casting right now. The casting looks really, really good compared to their, you know, to the drawings. You know, so I feel like there will start to be, you know, more of a change toward, you know, celebrating that sort of, you know, smaller market or niche things, you know, versus just the regular, you know, characters that, you know, everyone knows because they're products of the major corporations.
Well, I think that has to do too with, you know, studios or companies wanting to move in on something that's small that they can take advantage of, you know, as opposed to trying to license like Superman or, you know what I mean, which probably isn't even possible because these companies want to keep it internal. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I think Vamps was a Vertigo book, right?
I believe so.
Did you ever read it? Because I never read that one.
No.
So, I mean, I haven't read, but using that as an example, I'm sure if it's a creator-owned book or partially creative, it's through Vertigo. I think that, you know, you've obviously got, you know, it seems like it's definitely becoming a big thing for creator-owned books to get attention from Hollywood. I mean, it has been for the past, like, 10, 15 years or something like that. But it seems like more and more studios or whatever are getting smarter in the fact that, like, if it's a cult hit or if it's got a small fan base like Scott Pilgrim or something like that, that and they can find, or there's a director or a producer with a passion behind it, that those things are going to get made more often, you know, even Hellboy, like, let's say, because of the fact that there's, they can take that and make it bigger than what it is, you know, as far as, because Hellboy, what was Hellboy? It was nothing. And I would still say, you know, outside of us, the comic book fan, maybe to most people, they don't even know what that is still, you know? So, I mean, but they're able to I don't want to say take advantage of a creator, because obviously nobody took advantage of Mike Mignola, but they're able to work with someone who's more flexible.
Leverage it into something greater than what it was.
Yeah, and somebody like Mike Mignola is going to be much more flexible with his creation than, you know, a large corporation that's like, well, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't, you know what I mean? Because we still want to be able to sell this stuff to kids, you know what I mean? So that's interesting. Like, I mean, it's impressive that Christopher Nolan was able to do what he's been able to do with Batman, just knowing that they still want to sell Batman lunchboxes, Batman t-shirts, Batman, you know what I mean? But, you know, Batman left the gate as from being a kid's book a long time ago in a lot of ways. So
yes,
I don't know, but I guess I mean, is the responsibility in the publisher or is the responsibility in the comic shop? Because there was a sort of train of thought that I got into with some people on the Ain't It Cool message boards, where I actually think a little bit of what comic shops are doing, and I don't know if Mark Wade has sort of touched on this, you know, it's like I speak for Mark Wade and he's not even here. I don't even know the guy, you know, but I'm just saying, like, it just seems like are the comic shops holding back comic books, or are they doing them a service? Like, you know what I mean? Because of the fact that the digital retailers cannot reduce their prices because the comic book companies, you know, can't reduce the prices is the fact that the comic book companies can't reduce the prices of the printed product because they're trying to prop up the comic book store industry, or is it vice versa? You know what I'm saying?
I'm imagining it's probably a little bit of both.
Yeah.
At this point, you know, we it's in a way it's sort of a you know, sort of a it's evolved.
Yeah,
you know, it's definitely an it's evolved into what it is now.
Yeah,
because you know Diamond had a lot to do with that, and you know the whole collecting industry from the 90s had a lot to do with that. I mean, there were so many like sort of little things that sort of shoved that industry and shaped it into what it is now.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know at this point, and that's the sort of, you know, it's sort of a, I guess, dumb answer in a way, but it's like, I don't know what it will turn into. I just know that, you know, I don't go with the regularity that I did before, and I can only answer sort of for myself as to what it will take. And, you know, that's the only answer I've been able to come up with was the one that I gave about the sort of major creative investment on the part of a, you know, of a larger company.
Yeah.
You know, will that happen? You know, it's a possibility, you know, but I don't see, in a way, I don't sort of see that happening without a major influx of creative talent, the way they were able to get from Britain in the 1980s.
Yeah. But that's the thing. So on your end, it's sort of like you need a brand to say like, hey, this is quality, and that's what would make you go back on a regular basis.
Yes.
Instead of you having to search out, like, I'm looking at my bookshelf right now and there's a bunch of manga that is really impressive to me, like Monster and 20th Century Boys and Firefighter, you know, of, you know, whatever. There's all this, and those to me are great, great comic book stories, and they're put out through Viz Media, and they have a whole line of like manga that they consider like high end, or, you know, better than, above average than what, you know, like Girls in Sailor Suits and stuff like that. And but I'm the type of person that seeks out like totally different things. I mean, is that,
I guess maybe that's what I need to do is just start getting into higher end manga.
No, but I mean, just like, you know, it's what you're looking for is out there, but you're saying to me that's like, I need one company, you know, and or one brand to let me know that this is what they're doing, and maybe companies aren't doing that enough for you, or
that's yes,
or
yes,
maybe it's unrealistic to say, like, at this point, just one brand is going to be able to do that, you know, because there's so much great stuff out there, it becomes harder for you as a consumer to find it, you know what
that's
I mean?
That's part of it. You know, I just the comic book store, you know, it can be a very sort of confusing place for a consumer, you know, and one of the things that made it easy for me was to have a brand, a easily, you know, visually distinctive brand that I could see and say, okay, yeah, I will give this a try.
Yeah. I mean, I can see where you're coming with that. It's just, and there are people who are like, oh, I love Fantagraphics, or, you know, I love, you know, IDW, or, you know,
or Top Shelf, or
Top Shelf.
Like that.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, I just think that for me, that's sort of a mindset of like, hey, I only like DC Comics, you know what I mean? Where there's so many, especially now, there's just so many crazy publishers doing like so much different things. But I don't know. It seems like I said before, it's like when you talk about comics or you go to a comics message board, the thing that gets the most impression out of people is like, is Superman kissing Wonder Woman? And it's like, who gives a shit? Really? I mean, I don't really, because they did that already.
Is he?
I haven't read the issue. I actually had a chance to read it, and I haven't had a chance. I just wasn't that passionate about like checking it out. I haven't gone back to it, but because John Byrne and George Perez did it in the 80s, you know, and they did a nice little story. Of course, on Facebook, I got into a little tiff with somebody who hated the John Byrne story. Whatever, you know, that's up to you. You didn't like it, but it's sort of been addressed,
it's
you know,
been done before, right?
Yeah. And it's been done before, and that's fine. They're going to do a different take where now it's like, it seems to me like where they're actually going to be a couple. But it's like, now I'm talking about it. Like, I don't give a crap about it, but now I'm talking about it. You know what I mean? It's like that sort of thing where it's like, why isn't there a rabid fan base? Or maybe there is, and I just haven't found the site for Flash Gordon comics or, you know, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle collection that IDW is putting out. They're doing these amazing collections. I was never into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles before. I picked up the first one because it was a good price on Amazon, and I was like, let me check this out. And I loved it. And I picked up the second book, and now I want to pick up the third book because it was crazy, you know. But if you go to message boards, it doesn't seem like there's that much passion, you know. Mm-hmm. So, or...
Well, how about this? How about for the next time we talk?
Yeah.
Let's pick three current books that we're passionate about.
Yeah, let's do that. Absolutely.
Three current books that actually get us excited about comics.
Yeah, so the next one can be the next... one, and whoever joins in, we can do that. We can say everyone pick three books that they're really into and what they really love, and we'll go down why we love them. That's a good idea. But I guess so we're just never going to answer this question. Well, we've answered it for us, which is like what would get us back into it. And at this point, it's like nothing. I mean, even Comixology, I'm not going to pay $4 a week for a comic book, even though I'm not paying tax on it, and especially for something that's not giving me a PDF to keep, you know.
Right. Interestingly enough, though, I absolutely will support a creator.
You mean
like if I were to like meet them at a convention or whatever, or if I really like their book or whatever, I'll actually probably buy straight through them, you know, before I would buy, you know, go weekly at to a shop.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I agree that too. I mean, but have creators set up. I mean, maybe there's a setup for you know, a creator on his own website, you know, to buy through them. But I doubt that they're going to give you a deep discount that Amazon is. That's the problem, you know, is, I mean, I don't know, like being a parent and having bills and insurance and, you know, whatever to pay. it just seems to me like I got to go to where the best deal is. And that's part of my answer is the price is if you could go back to maybe comics for like $2. I'll tell you what, I'll say right now that if somebody was selling PDF comics, you know, for me to keep for $2, I would probably go back somehow to a weekly basis and be reading them on my tablet. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
If they were
being put out on a regular basis.
On a regular basis, which is often not the case. But now I'm trying to find this because I found a website through Bleeding Cool that was it was creator owned and they were doing their own, you know, PDF comics where you pay 99 cents and
you
get to keep the PDF. And I downloaded some of the preview books, and unfortunately, as we've said before, I've been so busy that I haven't even had time to read those PDF books because I'm reading something else right now, which is a huge honking chunk of comic. I'm reading A Drifting Life, which is amazing. Everyone should check that out. But and that will probably be one of my books for next week. But God, what is this site? I wish I could find it, but it's.
Well, tell you what, bring it next time.
Yeah, we should definitely talk about it next week because that to me is impressive. I mean, 99 cents, a PDF that you get to keep. Maybe I'll put a link on it on the site because I'm sure I'll find out about it after the podcast. So I guess the answer for you and me is, and maybe we can go back to this subject once we get some of the others on.
Absolutely.
But which I think it's a valid subject. I mean, you know, I think maybe a lot of people we know were never weekly readers, you know. I think that it's definitely something to check out. And if you're out there and you want to join in the discussion, you know, you can always email us at ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Check us out at parttimefanboy.com. And I guess that kind of wraps it up for this week. What do you think, Paul? Anything else
absolutely.
That you want to mention?
No, I'm really excited about talking about, you know, things that we are looking forward to, things that we love, because I think there is a lot of good stuff out there to love right now.
Absolutely, and let's not take another month off. Let's try and get this baby out on a regular basis.
Yes.
Yeah, all right, that's Part-Time Fanboy, and thanks for checking us out, and you have a fabulous week.
Fanboy.com.